Hello and welcome to Can't Lit.
It's Can't Lit.
Thank you, Jen. I'm so glad you jumped in like that.
It's Can't Lit. It's Can't Lit.
It's Can't Lit.
Are we going to sing today?
We can always sing. It's really important that we sing on the podcast. You know it's fall because I'm losing my voice. And that is the hallmark of every fall on this podcast. People are full of germs. And I'm doing a lot of yelling. So, we have a very amazing guest today.
So amazing.
The one, the only, Vivek Shreya. How are you?
Yes! That is the best singing we hear.
I don't know why I did a Broadway.
She's here. It's because Jen and I are you could tell that we're Broadway adjacent.
I was trying to be on brand for you.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy to have you. Wait, are you going to write a musical?
Okay.
In general.
Probably.
Okay, great. If you ever want to collaborate, I'm ready.
I am so into that idea.
You heard it here first.
We're going to write a musical.
Yes, Can't Lit, the musical.
I mean, honestly, it is a good idea. We'll be like, we'll promote it as a live podcast, but really it'll just be like a full musical.
Perfect.
But we will record it.
With original, like show tunes.
Original cast recording.
And choreography?
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God.
This is actually a really good idea.
It is a good idea. I'm glad we're airing it straight into these mics.
That's my greatest dream come true. Ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a Broadway actor, singer,
Me
dancer.
Me too.
Yeah.
There's Always. Time.
Is there time?
There's time. Absolutely, there's time.
I'm a terrible dancer. I can fake the singing.
I can't dance very well either, so... We'll just get someone to teach us.
I will
very
do
basic
the dancing and the singing.
We'll just, I'll just stand there and make jokes.
We'll be doing whatever. I'll be like, look at her. She's doing all the hard moves.
Isn't she amazing? Yeah.
I'll have like a big foam finger and I'll just be pointing at Vivek the whole time.
Yeah. All those big fans, those burlesque fans, and I'll just be waving them at you.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, we've got this down pat. It's going
to
be great.
I mean, you know I like to reference Gypsy in every episode, so I'm glad that we've talked about this.
Every episode is Broadway show tunes from now on.
Yep.
Daniel Zamparelli loves it.
Okay. Favorite Broadway show. Go.
Oh.
I mean, I do always have, there's no dancing, but I do have a real soft spot for Les Mis because I saw it when I was very young and it was super dramatic and I loved it.
Oh, we're going there. Okay. What about you?
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago was amazing. Yeah.
I like Miss Saigon.
Okay. I mean, Miss Saigon is great.
It's problematic, but I love it.
These are all great. I mean, I also love Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but have you ever seen Peaches Christ Superstar?
No, I really wanted to, and I'm very sad that I have not seen it.
It was very good.
Didn't Peaches did like a run of it at fringe festivals and stuff as well.
Yeah, like all over. Yeah.
The Peaches did?
The Peaches.
The.
Yeah.
Why did I not know about this?
One of my, I remember because this year, stupid Facebook memories, they're so weird. Mm. But most of mine are very stupid, so I don't even mind.
Yeah.
But one of mine was about that, and I was like, how am I going to get to see this? And it was about Peaches Christ Superstar, and that was this year. It was like whenever it had happened. That was the first prompt that came up. It was like, Dina, remember this from whatever year? And I was like, I remember not seeing
it. Isn't it your Facebook memories that constantly makes like video montages of like photos of me?
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things that it does.
Like randomly, and she'll send them to me and I'm like, oh, I'll remember that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful time. It's a beautiful time. So, everyone, what's happening? Jen, what's happening
with you?
What's
happening? So yesterday I had a work call. With Grey Stone, because we're putting out that anthology about essays from women writing about sexual assault and survivor.
What's it
called?
Well,
Stacey Mayfowles. It's called Whatever Gets You Through, April 2019. It's we're just finalizing cover right now. It's the best. I'm really proud of this book, actually. The contributors are all great. And many friends and former guests of the podcast. But they wanted to have this work call at like 4 p.m. And I'm like, you know, my child comes home from school at 3. Can we do it at 2? No, couldn't do it. I'm like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. And so yesterday, because it was raining, the dog didn't want to go out, so she was all squirrely. And then I'm on this call, and I can hear the dog barking in the kitchen because my son had left his sandwich from school, like, on the counter, and she wanted to eat it. So she's barking at it, and then And then Oscar starts yelling, "Stop barking! Stop barking!" And then she starts running in circles. Like, I can hear this from, and I hear this horrible banging on the stairs. She's dragging my rubber boots, like, up the stairs. Like,
oh my God.
My son's, like, chasing her. "Drop it! Drop it! Stop barking!"
Also, she's so small.
She's really small. And then the people on the work call were like, "This is really funny." I'm like, "Is it? Is it funny?" Because I can hear it all going down.
You can come over here and deal with this sandwich and this rubber boot if you think it's so funny.
And I mean, this is my life right now. Like, all of that. Anytime I try to do anything when, you know, without perfect circumstances, this is the shit that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's what's happening with me.
That's great.
Also, one more thing, and then I'll stop.
No.
Because I mentioned it before we started recording that I am writing an essay on YouTube makeup tutorials, which is basically
cannot
everything.
Cannot wait.
I know, yeah, right?
Cannot wait.
I'm really excited.
I mean, it's all I care about. What's happening with you, Dina?
I just got back from Victoria.
With Vivek.
Yeah, hi. Also there. It was great. Daniel was there.
Dina didn't come to my event.
I didn't.
Oh.
And it was like... No mention of it.
It was very rude.
Like, you know how usually you're like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I have to go somewhere." It was just like they just all disappeared.
We ran away.
I was like, "Oh,
why did you run away?"
We're just bad people. We're just really bad people.
And I went to their event.
I know.
And I would have been so fine if you didn't come to mine.
Yeah.
But like, there was just no acknowledgement. Yeah. Like, it was like they just ghosted.
We did
but in person.
That's
it was very cold.
That's painful.
It was really cold. It was a cold moment.
But like, honestly, I'm curious, why weren't you just like, "Hey, Vivek,
here's what happened." We were all standing there and then everyone was deciding what to do. And then we're like, "Oh, I guess we're not going to go to this event." And I'm like, "Okay." And then everyone had already gone into the event that was attending. And then we literally just, I can't believe you didn't see us because we were just standing in the courtyard. Looking anyway, it was really bad form. It was just all bad.
Daniel didn't text me. He wasn't like, "I had such a great time seeing you at brunch. You know, thanks for coming to my event. It's okay. Like, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, I couldn't see. I never go to Victoria, and I really wanted to go to the zoo. So like, I'm so sorry I couldn't come to your event." Like, there was like no cordiality. It was just like, "Bye."
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I would have gone.
Is this cantlet or canlet?
Yeah. These are good questions.
Are you uncomfortable right
this
now?
This podcast is are over. You, no, I'm fine.
Oh, that's
I like
too
being,
bad.
I love being dragged.
The listeners cannot see that Vivek is smiling ear to ear right now.
Yeah. But I genuinely, I can't say that I don't deserve everything that's happening right now because I do.
You know, my boyfriend texted me this morning and he was like, "Are you going to talk about what happened?"
Did you tell your boyfriend about it?
We processed it. We're like, is it just me or was that strange that they didn't even just like, you know, but I've been thinking so much about politeness and just like how, like, especially feminine people, I think, are just like so trained in politeness. Can I tell a funny story?
Yes.
Of course. So, you know, when you like get an internet ask, so like I'm sure both of you are constantly being asked for things, and one of my pet peeves is like when people ask you something, like I always send like a, if I can't do it, which is like a new thing for me, I'm usually like, "Yeah, sure, of course," and then I like stress out about it. So my new thing is like to spend a little bit of time and think about like if I actually can do it. And so I'm like, "Thank you so much for reaching out, you know, I'm a huge supporter of your work. You know, unfortunately right now my like plate is a little bit full, but like if there's anything else I can do to support your project, I'd be so happy to." You know, and then
that's very nice.
Yeah. And then they don't respond.
Which
I really, really don't like.
Yeah.
I sent a different kind of email to a writer, a famous American writer, who I'm not going to name just in case. And I was like, I'm such a huge fan of your work and I'm looking for a blurb for my new book. And it would mean so much to me to have your words on the book, blah, blah, blah. I get a one liner and it was like, "I'm all blurbed out." That's literally all it was. I'm all like, not my name. Like, "Hi Vivek, thank you so much for reaching out." Like nothing. Like, so
congratulations on your new book.
Exactly. And so I was just like, at first I was like, kind of like, the fuck. And then there was another part of me that was like, in awe. I was like, I need to be taking notes here. So really, this is all to say, you ghosting was probably like this like radical like move against like the feminine, you know, impetus to apologize and, you know, be pleasant. So I really applaud.
Oh my.
That's a lot of meaning you're putting on that ghosting right now.
Like, I genuinely just wanted to eat a grilled cheese. Like, it was, that was it.
Wow. This podcast is going downhill. I don't know what to say. I feel
we're in a fight right now. We're not talking.
I feel like my parents are in a fight and I'm like 8 years old and I don't know who to pick.
Well,
I think you're going to pick me.
I agree.
I'm
the guest. What are you going to do? Not pick the guest?
I mean, this is...
What kind of podcast is this?
It's a really rude one.
You should use that as like your advertising. Like,
what kind of podcast is this?
Exactly.
Oh, we should... Yeah, we'll make a little ad.
Yeah.
Oh, we totally should. We'll do a little GIF.
Do you want to talk about your events? Or do you want to talk about something else?
Aside from the fact that you weren't there?
Yeah. Aside from the palpable absence...
Sure. Is that a question?
I mean, what's happening with you? I said I was in Victoria. The end. This is
not
what happened.
The end. You ate grilled cheese.
Yeah. I ate a lot of things, to be honest.
I'm good. I'm promoting and touring this book, which is exciting. I'm getting to do a lot of festivals, which I've never, ever done in my career. So that's exciting. Vancouver Writers Festival in a couple of weeks, which I've never done.
Oh, so are you going to come back?
I'm coming... Vancouver. Whoa. Can't get enough. So yeah, I'm coming back for that. And but it's tricky because it's not an easy book to tour. It's not an easy book to promote. You know, these are the moments where like, why didn't I write a book about a nice, cute black cat that says, I do as I please.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a bag that's on the desk right now, you know, like, so that stuff is, I mean, again, I feel like a lot of privilege to be able to like share my work, but at the same time, I'm like, oof, this is not easy, especially because, and I'm sort of used to this from even this page is white, but you know, when you're in a room sort of challenging the oppressor and the room is mostly like, or half the oppressor, it's a little bit like,
well, those are book audiences, right? Like, I mean, book
totally.
Audiences are very, very,
white or male or
white and older. They're not super young. And it's, well, yeah, that's a question though. So in what, how do you feel promoting this book, which is all about, you know,
you didn't read it, did you?
Of course I read it.
You were eating grilled cheese.
I read the book. I legitimately
I'm joking.
The amazing texts Jen was sending me about.
It's true. Your tweet is so nice.
I was crying and I texted Dina because there's so much in this book about, I'm afraid of men. I mean, the title is exactly what the book is about actually.
Yes.
So, and this is the question, but like it reminds me somewhat. There's a scene in your book where you're wearing your mom's jacket, the blue jacket, and
Jordache.
Yes.
The Jordache. Shout out to Jordache. Please sponsor the podcast. Yeah. That jacket and the giggling girl behind you, and it kind of makes me think of like having to stand up in front of an audience that you are not sure are going to be entirely receptive
totally.
To what you're going to say.
Totally.
So how is that feeling for you on this, in this touring process?
It's really mixed. Like on one hand, I'm like, you know, I'm 16 years in, so I, you know, the stage isn't a new place for me. And like I said, I feel in a lot of ways, like even this page is white really primed me for this because poetry audiences are very white. And so, you know, having to get up and read poetry about white supremacy in white rooms was like its own kind of challenge. I think like we were talking about, you know, I think the challenge with this book is that it's nonfiction and there's something about poetry that still, you know, has a bit of a barrier from the audience because it's like metaphor, you know, even with a title like Even This Page Is White, I feel like there's a way for the audience to maybe disconnect or not feel like it's about them. But with this book, it's very literal, like the title, it's very direct, it's very assertive. So it does feel hard and unpredictable. Like I always, you know, there was like a huge, response to my launch in Toronto, and apparently a ton of people were coming, and I was like, for weeks, like, no joke, convinced that it was like going to be like a group of incel, you know, like I was like, who are these people? I don't know who they are and who wants to have this conversation. And even the response to the book, like, I mean, I'm thrilled that people are reading it, but I'm also just like kind of suspicious. I'm like, what are people taking from a trans feminine POC narrative about masculinity? Like, what is the draw here? So it's a bit nerve wracking, but I mean, I will say in Victoria, you know, it was like this like awkward 5 to 10 minute pause after I had finished my reading. And then after I had finished this, like the room started applauding, like clapping. And then one woman yelled, "Brava!" And I was like, oh, this is a new one. This is one I can add to the to the memory bank, because like, I've never been bravaed before. Right. So I think part of it is also, I mean, truthfully, part of it, there's a part of me, for better or for worse, and I think this is one of the reasons why I keep making like books like this, is because I have a deep belief that we shouldn't underestimate the audience and we shouldn't underestimate the reader, and that change is still possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it is ultimately a hopeful endeavor, and in the writing and also in the performing. So there's a part of me that gets up on there. If I genuinely felt that I was going to get up on stage and everyone was going to throw tomatoes at me, I probably wouldn't do it. But there's a part of me that's like, this is for the women in this room, the gender nonconforming people in the room, the people of color in this room, the other men in this room, mm-hmm. the fags in this room, that like need to hear fear be owned and claimed and talked about. So, you know, that's the hope.
I think too, though, in this book, you selectively write about, you know, memories or events. And I do think that sometimes when your message is almost, when your message is really, you know, steeped in politics or social stuff, that when you add personal touches, that makes people emotionally connect more and understand better. Although there is actually a paragraph in here where you say, why do I always have to show you my trauma for you to understand? Mm-hmm. So it's like a double-edged sword, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think also that comes from, like, when you write something that includes your own experience and it's published, mm-hmm. people take that as, like, your personal and your professional life are colliding in this way. And then I think it's similar to your appearance, wherein then if you literally leave your home, people feel that they can comment on it in any number of ways. And I think, I mean, that's why nonfiction intimidates me, even though, like, I don't know, what do I have to hide? I'm just a shitty ghoster. But like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's these, I do wish people could see your face every time. You're the best. But were you thinking about that as you were writing? Like, as, again, as we had talked about, the idea of poetry sort of coding things, whereas as soon as you're putting, yeah, your personal experience into it, you know, and you're writing about your personal experience of being judged in these public places.
I mean, for me in a lot of ways, so this is my first like official nonfiction effort. And it was kind of a relief, to be honest, because, you know, a lot of my work is based on my own experience. But I've, for a lot of reasons, coded it as fiction or creative nonfiction. And some of that is because, you know, as racialized people, as feminine people, as queer people, you know, there's an assumption that, you know, we're just writing from our journals. So, and you know, once you say that it's based on your life, like your craft is completely undermined. And so with previous efforts, I've been very adamant, which is funny, 'cause like white people talk about like are boring from their lives in, I said borrowing, not boring, but from their lives.
I wish I had some sound effects that I could drop in
fiction all the time. And no one's like, you know, I don't think there's as deep of an investment that it's based on the writer in the same way. So in this respect, nonfiction was like, great. I don't have to worry about like how I'm the frame of this or the lens I'm going to. And I don't think I could have written nonfiction until this moment, because I needed to be able to assert my narrative in other mediums first, and mostly to assert myself as a writer with craft first. So yeah, it just felt like a relief to be like, this is me, and I'm not going to have to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to have to frame it as fiction. I can just go there and I can be vulnerable and I can say the things. I'm also plagued with an unfortunate ability to feel a lot of regret and remorse after the writing process as opposed to during. So I think a lot of writers, I mean, it's not that I didn't struggle to write the book, but usually it's like a lot of writers are like, I don't know how I'm going to say this important thing I need to say, but I'm just like with the knife in the skin, just like,
ugh. Yeah.
And then after I'm like, oh fuck, can I swear?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. What have I done? Yeah. Right. So, which is like a very lucky thing in a lot of ways to have. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, I like that. I also think, like you just brought up, you know, sort of craft and structure. And I think this book is very deliberately structured. Mm-hmm. And I think it's extremely successful. I mean, your writing is beautiful. You're a poet. You're a songwriter. Like,
tell me more.
Yeah, I would love to just shower you with praise. I brought
this. Is this guilt?
Yeah. I'm Italian, so of course it is.
I'm just going to intro for one second. No. Is that your description of that Jordache jacket? It's in my head.
I know.
The shoulders and the way it's kind of, it was so slouchy. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I can see those jackets so
I still
clearly.
Want that jacket. Where is that jacket?
I do also just remember seeing those Jordache jackets. Yeah. Ugh, what a beaut.
Classic. I'm going to go on eBay after this.
One of your fans should be buying that and sending it to the publisher for you.
Just hopefully not covered in spit.
No, it has to be.
Or anything. Not covered in anything.
That's where my mind goes, right?
That's
like
fair.
I'm like,
No, it's understandable.
A nice clean version of
yes,
this jacket.
Yes, please, clean.
Pristine condition. Structure. So as you were writing it, did it go through different structural changes? Because yeah, it starts in this extremely, I mean, it's very personal throughout, but like it extremely like memoir-ish beginning. And then it starts to get, you know, sort of more philosophical as the book continues. So,
So, I mean, the biggest change was moving from like first and third person to, second person in that first half. Mm-hmm. So that was all written in first person. And I just thought a lot. So I'm talking about like, you know, this happened to me, that happened to me. But after I wrote it, there was something about it that felt deeply unsettling to be a marginalized body and know that if readers were to engage with it, there's something about like a voyeurism that's allowed and permitted in memoir that when you're sharing a history of harm, feels yucky. I'm like, you as a reader, I mean, aside from the fact that you get to just, you know, engage from a distance, you also get to put this book down whenever you want. You get to go take a poo whenever you want. Like you don't, there's no allegiance. You're not, I'm doing this work of talking about a particular narrative, but you can put it down at any point. There's no commitment, right? You're not putting a ring on it. And I was like, well, if I change it to second person, it actually forces you to be a little bit complicit. It forces you to be accountable in a way. Obviously, when I'm using second person, I'm talking to a man. And simultaneously, I knew that the book would be read predominantly by women, but I wanted women as well to be sort of sitting in this discomfort of like, mm-hmm. who is this man? And are you addressing me? Or, you know, I had someone from high school actually who like now follows me on Twitter, tweet me and be like, was I the girl that laughed?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And if so, I'm terribly sorry. I know I didn't do enough and I'm going to do better. And like, that's actually the first official apology I've gotten from like a high school person, which was pretty incredible. And I think that there was something about the way that the book is written in terms of the you and the way that it forces the reader to be in that hot seat, so to speak, that allowed for that to happen. Maybe I'm overestimating second person, but yeah. So, I mean, and then in terms of the second half of the book, so what we ended up doing was we decided that it would be confusing to bounce around from first person to second person. So we just created chapters. So there's the you chapter and then there's a me chapter, because I also knew that like for me, a big part of this story is wanting to also hold myself accountable as someone that was male, that was someone who did learn how to be a man, how to, you know, live up to masculinity. And so it felt very important that that was part of the narrative as well, that it wasn't just you, that it was also me.
I think that's part of what makes this book so special for me is how much space you gave to how much effort you put in to being masculine, actually. Mm. And that was one of the most, for me, emotionally gutting. 'Cause like I'm a woman and I've always, you know, dressed a certain way or whatever. So sure. Reading that and I was thinking if I had to put on masculinity, how painful that would have been.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Yeah. You're the first person to say that. So thank you.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Again, because I'm so curious what people are taking from the book, I'm like, that sounds very interesting to me. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah.
Like I wouldn't want to wear plaid shirts and
no color.
It just felt really, really super painful. It hurt to read that for me, which was, I think, a very successful, you know, writing then.
Thank
you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I mean, the Tom Cruise stuff. it's so specific. And I feel, I mean, even that to me also, like, there was also a weird, I don't know if painfulness, but like, it made me feel uncomfortable to think about, like, you know, okay, how do you choose like a role model for what you think needs to be happening in your life so that other people, it's not just for yourself, it's like so that other people will treat you a certain
way.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so tell us about Tom Cruise.
Well, I mean, you know, this is like 80s and 90s Tom Cruise, right? And so it's like in a lot of ways peak Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah, that's peak Cruise.
Yeah. And you know, there was something about him, and like I remember just observing the fact that like men seem to really openly admire him. Like men love going to see a Tom Cruise movie, right? And women also really like admired him and were into him. And there was something about him that wasn't threatening. There was something about Tom Cruise that was actually quite easy, but like one step above easy. So like, you know, as I talk about in the book, like I realized if I wanted to survive, I couldn't just be an average man. I needed to be like better than. And Tom Cruise in a lot of ways is like, you know, the boy next door times 10, right? Or times 5. And so there was something about Tom that just felt like very accessible. And I remember like literally with my last partner going into like the Bay or Club Monaco and like holding something and be like, would Tom Cruise wear this? Like it was like literally every choice I made and anything that was like too colorful, too flashy, you know, it was like it wouldn't pass the Tom Cruise test. And for me, that was, it was actually a very useful model because let's face it, Tom Cruise is very popular.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because, I mean, obviously, it's like Tom Cruise has been hounded by like gay rumors and all that kind of stuff too. But I think that's also just the nature of like most very popular men. But overall, there was something about Tom that just like felt very accessible to me in terms of like a role model.
Well, and he really was everywhere.
The thing I think about Tom Cruise when I was reading that section too, is that I think Tom Cruise himself lives with a bunch of rules.
Totally. Right? Yeah. I'm sure he has his own Tom Cruise test.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I'm sure he does. And I mean, we at the time didn't know that some of that regimen was coming from this whole other world of Scientology and like, yeah. So, there's so much.
We want Tom Cruise to read this book.
Great.
I do want Tom Cruise to read this book.
Hey, Tom Cruise, read this book. I'm Afraid of Men, Vivek Shraya.
Yeah, please read it. I know he definitely
listens to this. Let's tweet at Tom Cruise.
I know you listen to
this. He's probably not on Twitter.
I don't think he is.
Yeah.
I really don't think
he lives in like a all glass conservatory or something. I don't know what he does. Where he just practices stunts all day.
He rolls in and out of bomber jackets.
if it's a Jordache one, it would be fine.
I mean, I would like to see him in a Jordache. It's like this is all pre-2 Magnolia. I kept thinking about the Magnolia Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he was very good in Magnolia.
So he was very good.
He was very good. And I mean, that whole thing is like about masculinity and exerting your masculinity. And as I was reading that part of the book, I couldn't help but think of, his character and how intense that. And did you ever get into self-help?
Books?
Either, anyone?
Yeah. Like recently, not like as a child.
Yeah, because I feel like at the time, self-help was starting to be like a more new agey.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like that Celestine time. Prophecy. Yeah.
Oh, I definitely did that.
Yeah.
And I did Chicken Soup for the Soul. Yeah, I did Conversations with God, like all of those.
Yeah. And I feel like this, that hyper Magnolia masculinity was coming from the opposite of all that stuff.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. I think about self-help culture way too much.
That's an essay you need to write.
Exactly.
I know. You're right. I'll get into it.
Okay. When your fellow writer has a reading, go for grilled cheese. Self-help tip number one.
Dina looks so guilty right now.
I have so much to make up for in my life, but now this is my only goal, is to get Vivek to forgive me for my carelessness.
I've just guaranteed that Dina's just going to come to every event I have now for like
I'm going to fly around the country.
I'll see you tonight.
See you tonight? Yeah. You will see me tonight.
No, please don't.
I'm going to stand in the front row and just go,
eating your grilled cheese.
Over and over again.
Like every 15 minutes.
Until someone asks me to stop. Be like, excuse me, ma'am, please. Please. Don't do that.
Your enthusiasm is too much.
I get escorted out of SFU. Oh, what a life.
Can we talk about your sort of career as a whole?
Yes, please.
Because there's so much, what's the word I'm looking for? There's so many areas of creativity as an artist. There are not that many authors that do as many creative things as you do. There's the music. There's your visual art project, Trisha, which is beautiful. Trisha is beautiful. Your mother is so beautiful. Such a babe. I can't even. So photogenic. So when you're looking at your, do you do one thing at a time, or does everything feel like part of a whole for you?
That's a really good question. Increasingly, I mean, so I came into art through music. Like that was where my heart was. But music didn't really work out the way I wanted it to. And I was sort of forced to find other ways to be creative because I just had so much creativity. And so that's when I ended up writing my first book, God Loves Hair. And I never wrote it again with the intention of like, now I'm going to move into the literary world. But for whatever reason, that's where I started connecting to audiences in a way that I hadn't before. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm not just a musician, maybe I have more to say. And that's when I started exploring short film as well. And so now where I'm at is I definitely see myself as more of, you know, this term multidisciplinary artist. And I like, part of it is I have a very short attention span. So being able to jump around from medium to medium is just like really exciting for me. And I also like a challenge. I don't like, I mean, obviously there are themes that I'm drawn to, no matter how much I try to push against that. But I like, yeah, just trying, like flexing my muscle in different ways. And I do sort of see it as all part of like, I mean, it's not necessarily a linear body of work, but I all see it as being connected. I mean, I'm Afraid of Men started out as a song that was on my album last year called Part-Time Woman. And
a great song.
Thank you.
It's a great album.
Oh, thank you. And then, you know, it evolved into a book. And then this year, my band, To Attach, we did a remix with Peaches, we've already talked about. And so, you know, for me, it's just really exciting about, like, I'm just excited about art. I think art is, like, I love making art. I love my job. I love what I do. And I just love, like, what art can do. And so I just, like, want to try everything. And I want to, like, I want to have fun with everything. And I hope that it is part of like a broader picture. I think a couple years ago, five years ago, I was at the AGO in Ontario and in Toronto, and there was a General Idea exhibit. I don't know if you know who General Idea is, but they're like a collective of like queer artists, and it was like a 3-floor exhibit. And for me, what was so exciting about it is it really like impressed upon me the idea of a body of work. Yeah. And I think for so many artists, we're so plagued by the one project. I have, you know, friends that are very talented who have great ideas, but it's like you become very focused on like, I need this book to matter, and how this book might be the only project I ever make. And I think there was something about seeing this exhibit that really freed me. And I was like, oh, actually I want to be thinking more about the body as opposed to singular, because the body allows me to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. The body allows me to get the formula right, whatever that means. The body allows me to keep trying. The body doesn't force me to just be like, this is it. This is the only thing. It allows me to like, be like, okay, this is this moment. This is this idea. This is this idea in this particular, you know, atmosphere, but maybe there's a different way. Maybe there's a different lens. There's a different perspective. So for me, I'm just like, Basically what this is a long plug for like my retrospective in 10 years. That's what I'm like. That's the goal.
It's Dina, like, will be there.
Certainly.
I am buying.
Brava.
I'm buying tickets in advance. I love all of that stuff that you just said. And I think you make it very clear that art is important to you and you love it and you're supportive of other artists and that art is important to people. I think so often we want to diminish it as something that isn't useful, you know, mm-hmm. like, yes, food, shelter, very important, clean water, extremely important. But without that, I don't know. I think there are so many things that people don't get to see or get to experience or get to feel when they don't have art in their lives. So my question is also coming from that, like, have you ever created something and then realized that it didn't fit a particular genre, that it actually needed to become something else? Like, I know that the song became a book, but like, because you work in so many disciplines, has there ever been something that's completely sort of had to change course because mm-hmm. of that?
Yeah. I mean, I will say the song is kind of the least popular song on the album. You know, like nobody, you know, when people listen to an album, if they listen to an album, they're like, oh, this is my favorite song. I like this track, or this track is really cool. And I'm Afraid of Men was the one song that nobody ever mentioned. And I don't know if it's because of the title or like what it was about that song that just people didn't really connect to in the context of the album. So for me, what's exciting is thinking, and I remember thinking like, I guess that didn't really land. And so it's been interesting now for the book to have such an incredible life already, because I'm like, well, maybe it was just not the right medium, or maybe it was like the beginning of the conversation. I was working, I was taking a stab at a dystopian novel that was going to look at, race and white supremacy. And I'd written about 30 pages and there was something about it that just like, ooh, I just like, I mean, writer's block is a thing obviously, but like there was something about just like, you know, when you're like, I mean, you haven't had winter since who knows when, but like Alberta winter where you turn your car on and the tires are just like, but like the car just like won't move. I don't know why I said won't move, but I was just like really trying to emphasize that.
It sounded cooler.
The, yeah. And that's what was happening with this novel. And then I was like, maybe it's not a novel. And so I went through with a highlighter and I just like selected passages from it. And then I was like, oh, this is poetry. And so that's actually how Even This Page Is White happened, was, and with a little bit of like guidance from Amber Dawn as well.
Former guest, friend of the podcast.
Exactly. So yeah, that was definitely one example where I like had this idea and I was sure that it was a novel and it was going to be my next novel. And I was like working on it and working on it. And it just wasn't doing the thing I wanted it to do. And then suddenly it turned into poetry and I was like, oh, like this is how I want to tackle this particular idea, that actually talking about white supremacy in poetry is gonna like, it's poetry is gonna like serve me better than a novel will.
This is, sorry, quickly, this is really good for all my students who I always tell them, never throw away anything.
Exactly.
Never delete a thing. Exactly. Save it, save it, save it.
Totally.
You don't know what it's going to do later.
Yeah.
Also, you like, have your special folders for the things that, you know, like, I think having your work organized in whatever way that it works for you also is super helpful. Like, I just remembered that I wrote that poem about Miss Elizabeth from WWE recently because I went into Submittable after, like, 5 years of not going in. And I was like, oh, this is a weird poem. I'm so happy to have found it. I straight up did delete it. And I don't know what happened to
it. I legit have a folder called Deleted Things.
Yeah.
Oh.
And actually, when I'm in the middle of a project and sometimes you don't know what to do next with, like, say, a book-length project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I wonder if there's any ideas in deleted things, and I open it up and there always is.
Wow.
There's always something. My deleted things folder is quite big at this point.
Yeah.
But it totally works is all I'm saying.
I think it's smart. Keep your...
Plagiarize yourself. That's all.
Plagiarize
yourself. Bad advice for students.
Yeah. Don't do that in my class. It very clearly states you have to have started.
Don't do it for me.
September 2018.
You can go on ratemyprofessors.com and we can talk about it.
So coming off that question, you do many types of performances. So this is a two-part question. One, what is your preferred event type, literary? And then maybe you can also talk about
music. Good question.
Yeah, but also...
I have so much to say about this. This will take like 20
wait,
minutes.
Here's my other question. I also want to know how you make, because you were named one of the most stylish people in the country.
Oh, yes. By the Globe and Mail.
By the Globe and Mail. So, and you are. I mean, the DoorDash jacket was just the beginning.
We also we have to say we only have people with very good hair.
It is important to the podcast.
Vivek has very good hair.
Yeah, this is true. How do you also, in addition to like event preference and that, make choices for different types of events, different types of performances? Fashion-wise.
Okay, great. I love these questions.
That's a very good question.
I've been waiting for this question. So I really love literary events because music is one of the only mediums where it's absolutely okay to like spend a lot of money to see Beyonce, who's in the city right now. Hallowed be thy name.
Let's go look for her after we're done here.
And then talk.
She's just floating above the ocean right now.
And then talk the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, you go into an art gallery, you're quiet. You go to a literary event, somebody could be the worst reading, like, and you will be quiet. You won't be on your phone. You go see a movie, you're quiet. Like, for the most part, I'm a bit of a talker in the movie, but for the most part, people are quiet when they engage with art. But music, they are not quiet. And so, you know, I feel like the literary world has really spoiled me. Because I'm just like, oh, and other thing too is like, you can like with music, it's like there's sound check and then there's the other band and it's like, it's your day starts at like 5 and you're home at like 1:30. Yeah. Literary event starts at 3 o'clock, nice time in the afternoon, you know, and you have to show up at like 2:30 maybe. Mm-hmm. You get to talk. People come up to you after, they say very nice things, you changed my life, and you're like, oh my God, how lovely. Then you get to actually see the city you're in. You know, you feel really good.
People bring you cookies.
People bring you cookies. People maybe bring you a Jordache jacket they found on eBay for you.
I mean, hopefully.
A clean one. And you move on, right? So I don't know. I really, really like literary events for that reason. That said, I will say that Too Attached has been doing a lot of like hybrid literary and music stuff where we, like, I'm reading poetry. You know, we did this show in Winnipeg recently where I read from I'm Afraid of Men. I sing, you know, we dance. It's like, but we're also like kind of in semi-theater spaces. So some of the like brave ones dance and some of the brave ones, not so brave ones, sit. Not brave, but dance-oriented people. And I'm really, really enjoying that. Like, for me, I'm like, how do I do more events like that? Because it's a little bit of everything. I really like a tour uniform to, like, ease into question number two over here. Because, you know, at first, the problem of, like, what am I going to wear is very exciting. It's, like, fun. I have so many events. I'm going to wear so many things. And then after a while, it just kind of becomes stressful, you know, and especially when shopping. For me, as like a trans feminine person, it's like, it's not a fun experience. I really like having one outfit. So right now with this book, I'm doing like an orange shift dress with gold pockets.
It's very beautiful.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So, you know,
that looks great in photos.
Thank you.
Instagram is so good.
Thank you. I mean, sometimes I'm like, do people think I'm just posting the same photo from the same gig over and over again? But anyways, that's sort of the uniform. But, I've been really lucky in the past, couple of years, I've been working with a designer that I really like, a black queer designer by the name of Lou Mastrano. And one of the things I always recommend to women and gender nonconforming people and people with like fat bodies is like at one point in your life, treat yourself and get something tailored, because the thing that it taught me is that my body is not the problem. And again, we know we can shake our heads and we know that objectively, but when you're in that store and you're in that dressing room with terrible lighting, you're like, I hate my body. There's something wrong with me. I should be on the treadmill. What is wrong with me? But then you get someone and you're like, I must only deserve to get to wear, you know, large, expensive, colorless sacks, like garbage bags. Mm-hmm. Like that's all that's made for my body. My body is not sexy. My body is not attractive. And then you get someone tailor make something for you and you're like, oh, actually this body is sexy. This body actually does look nice. It's just that none of these clothes are made for it. So I usually splurge for like a project when I'm touring a project to just like have him make me something, because again, it's a uniform and I'll get a lot of wear out of it. So it feels like a healthy investment. Yep. And B, if I'm going to get on stage, I want to feel amazing.
You have to feel amazing.
Especially when the majority of the time I'm getting on stage and being like, I'm afraid of men. So,
You're like, drink this in, but also drink these words in.
So that designer.
No, but it's also a form of armor for me,
oh,
right?
For sure.
Like, it's less about, I mean, the Instagram
is
nice.
It's protective, isn't it?
But it is. There's something about, like, you know, wearing something that you feel confident, you feel sexy, but also that holds you in a way that, like, feels like with even this Page Is White, I worked with a different designer and he made this thing. I don't know if you. Anyone remembers, but it had like it was a denim sort of like thing, but it had a giant collar. Mm-hmm. And with that book in particular,
I remember.
Thank you. Yeah. There was something about it. I felt protected. Like when I put that on, I felt like I could go into a white poetry room and say the things I needed to say.
You wear a giant collar very well.
Thank you so much.
I have a very short neck, so I can't, but you...
I got a long one, yeah. Well, I have long neck privilege here.
You have long neck So that designer is the one who made the dress you wore for the Globe and Mail shoot.
Yeah, totally.
And then also what you've been wearing for to perform for, with Too Attached too, right?
Exactly.
Because there's this red and
gold. With the... Yeah.
Like, is it a bustier?
Yeah,
what is,
it's, it's a bra. From Amazon.
Oh, no.
What?
Yes, the bras from Amazon. So that was an add-on. Yeah,
Or com?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Sponsorship?
They're definitely not sponsoring.
But yeah, so and we always talk about like the theme of the project, like what I wanted to convey. And with that one, I was like, this project's called Angry. The album's called Angry. And he was like, he made me like Girl on Fire, basically like Katniss styles. And like something that's like, it's like like it's like red, gold, and orange. It's like an ombre.
Yeah. It looks like flames.
Yeah.
It's friggin' beautiful is
Thank
all I'm
you.
Saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, it's great. I get to put on this thing, feel good, feel attractive.
Cause, and before that you had sort of like a jacket, like. With the little shorts? Didn't you have an outfit?
Oh, yeah. That was blue sequins.
That was the blue,
yeah. Yeah, so when I opened for Tegan and Sarah, he made this incredible with, like, big, like, puffy shoulders. And, you know, again, it was such a, like, big opportunity for us to get to open for Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I want these photos to look really good. So, yeah, he made this, like, incredible, like, blue sequined outfit.
It was like you were from the sea.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, tour uniform.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
I will say about this designer that whenever I see his clothes on you, there's some kind of magic with the seams. Like I'm not a sewer, but like there's some kind of magic with the seams and the way that it's sewn together, the pieces, like each panel, the panels of the fabric. I don't know. There's something
this
there.
This shift that you're currently have been wearing, I feel like it looks like it has no seams.
Which is
it
cool
looks like
too.
Just like you're wrapped in this fabric.
So that was from the Bay.
No way.
Yeah, just from the Bay.
No way.
You know, lots of selection helps.
Yeah, being able to find somewhere to shop helps. Yeah, are there other places that you shop like in the world?
Anyways, yes, but really quickly, I just want to say that, yeah, Mick Carter has his name. I'm like Lou Mostrano, but like, of course he has a name too. So Lou Mostrano is his company's name. Right. Mick Carter is the designer. And it just, you know, what's so great about him too, is that like, I feel like he just really understands what I'm trying to do. Like his work in general is like is very much about the androgynous body, but also with a bit of feminine. And I mean, he's always pushing me to do something asymmetrical and I'm like, nope, I'm a very symmetrical, boring, like matchy, but he really gets that. I think maybe one day we'll do the asymmetrical, but so yeah. And he's, you know, he's black and he's queer. Like I feel like he also understands the politics. Like I don't have to explain. Like I can be like, this album is about POC resilience, and he's like, yep, okay, check, got it, you know. So, and he did like for the press photos of Part-Time Woman, I like had this like big leather jacket and this like purple like with like a lot of chest, and again he did that. So he's incredible. But yeah, I do have to find places to like shop as a civilian, because I can't afford to like have someone design me things all the time.
Unfortunately, you're not.
I wish
Beyonce level yet.
Right, something to hashtag goals for. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of online shopping with good return policies, because again, going into a store, looking the way that I do, and especially if I'm not wearing makeup, even when I'm wearing makeup, they're like, the men's section is over there. They'll literally say that to me. So it just feels very awkward. And like underwear is also a thing, because it's like, there's nothing. Nothing screams pervert more than someone that looks like a male looking at a bra at the Bay. So I just end up having to like shop online a lot, which is fine. So I like the Bay a lot. I like Zara a lot because of their return policy. I know all of these companies are kind of terrible and there's all kinds of like ethical issues too. So it's like also finding that balance. I do vintage when I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that makes, that, these all are that good makes tips. Sense. Yeah.
I will say that Zara makes, ethical issues aside, makes very good clothes for having to do literary things, actually.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah.
I think we covered everything.
Oh, I only have one extremely important question for you. How do you pose with a non-smiling face and look gorgeous and cool? I always look like I am pooping. So I really need advice on this. You're so good at it.
Yeah, and Vivek looks happy.
Yes, but you're not smiling, and I don't know how to do
it. Okay, but we've watched Top Model, right? Smiling.
We have, and I have tried
this. Smile with your eyes.
And I can do it with this, but then this part of my face looks...
I will never forget. I did this video with like my ex-partner, and the director kept just telling her like, look like sexy sad. You know, like she's someone who has like a very beautiful smile, and like the smile just does not work for her because she just looks kind of like disjointed when she's just like... So, and like the director was like, sexy, sad, and it just wasn't working. But like, I'm like, embrace the thing that your face does best. And I feel like, look at your smile, like just smile in the photo.
Right.
Like that just suits you. That's your brand. Yeah. My brand is.
I love
so good all of a sudden.
I love your brand. My brand is like.
Your brand is.
I have no facial control.
That's great though. But that's what shines in a photo, right? Like people connect to what is quote unquote authentic.
I mean, I agree. And I think again, this is something that's like, yes, your Instagram is extremely beautiful. Your social media is.
Stop.
It is. But I also think it's because it's who you are. Like, I think you can really tell. I mean, we all know there's Instagram influencers out there, but when people, I think when you're promoting your work, it's good for people to see who you are. Like, this is why I never advise young or emerging writers. They're like, should I get a Facebook page? I'm like, definitely don't. Like, people just want to see who you are. And also, you don't, I mean, if that's what makes you comfortable and you only want it to be professional, that's fine. But I think, you know, that line is, I think it's fucked up. I think it actually ruins the relationship that you can have with people that want to know who you are as an artist.
That's so interesting. I get the exact opposite advice to young emerging writers. I'm like, be on all social media platforms.
Oh, I think they should be on them, but I don't think that you should always have like a separate, you shouldn't be like, this is the extremely professional side of me. And this is the extreme personal side of me. Like,
no, I think, kept it all integrated.
Me too. And
people want to connect.
But I think that it shows. And I think it shows with you as well, Jen. I don't know. I think there's just something that's, the connectivity is, I don't know. I think it's just more honest for people. I don't know.
And yeah, I do think
they should be online for sure. If they're comfortable doing that.
I do understand though why some people have like a private personal profile too.
For sure. Right?
Because that also makes sense.
No, it totally does make sense. Yeah. But I think that, yeah, you know, it's
we're gonna fight again.
Cultivating what you want to be. Holy fuck. Jen, are you ready? It's your time.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Oh, we have new segments since you were on last time.
Okay, great.
So this is Jen's Emotion Corner, where for 1 minute, Jen will be emotional.
Oh, okay, great.
I just emote.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the news lately has been a real roller coaster of shit. Thanks a lot, Brett. And normally, for the last 3 years, I've been able to at least partially compartmentalize it from away from my life, be mad about what's going on in the world, and then go on with my day. But lately, I can't, and I can't actually do stuff when the shit is really terrible. And I don't know why this is. I could just be getting older. Maybe it's my perimenopausal body. I don't know. But it's the last week or so, I've been crying all the time. And I think... it's been so many years of traumatizing news, of having to constantly fight to prove that my body and my brain is worth something to all the Bretts and the Brads and the Bryans. Oh, they all sound the same. And just realizing that sort of trying to dismantle the system of oppression and bullshit is so much more work for us as individuals and communities. And it's getting to a breaking point now where I feel like I might have to crawl into my bed and not come out all winter. Is that a minute?
Yeah, that was a perfect minute.
I'm going to explode.
Jen, that was beautiful, and I love you so much.
I love you guys.
I'm retweeting all of that right now.
You could. Please do. You can retweet anything I say here. Dina?
Yeah.
You ready for your rage minute?
Yeah, but it's going to be weird.
It's going to be weird?
Yep.
Oh, I like that.
It's going to be fine. Well, because of things that have happened during this podcast.
Okay. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Okay, every instance of someone doubling down on being an asshole instead of admitting they made a mistake. Vivek, I made a mistake. I should have come to your event or told you why I wasn't coming. But guess what, turds? Everyone has made mistakes. And if you don't think you've ever made a mistake, I would suggest you stay home for life. Rate my professor. Has this ever gone well for anyone? Has this ever been useful for anyone?
No.
It is a dumping ground for the most offensive shit. Maybe finish your assignments instead of writing about how someone is ugly inside and out. Shopping for boots. Why does it have to be so stressful? Our feet are very important. They hold us up. Am I just going to become the Simple Life era Nicole Richie and go straight to Uggs? And finally, this bald patch that showed up on my left eyebrow, it's awful. I know I said a lot of mean things about my eyebrows over the course of my hairy life, but I just want some of these hairs to come back. I miss them so much. I covered it up today. But like, I have a new bald patch and I don't know where it came from. And I miss my I have still otherwise so much eyebrow except for in this little patch.
Like, is it visible? You can't really see it right now. It's like right here. Oh. I brushed them around and stuff.
It's very new.
You know that stuff that people put on their eyelashes to make them grow?
Yeah.
You can put that on your
eyebrows.
I'm going
to try that. Yeah.
Coconut oil.
Oh, okay. I'll try both.
Coconut
of those.
Oil works for everything.
But it's like, it just appeared.
Yeah, okay.
It just appeared. It's brand new. Anyway, please don't go and read my professor.
I've never looked at my professor.
I did, and it was one of the worst mistakes I've ever made. But don't worry. I'm ugly inside and out, and it's really more than everyone knows it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Listeners can't see how hard Dina is smiling right now.
It's so absurd. Jen saw it. It was extremely horrible.
I saw it. It was horrible.
Also, it did say, hates all men.
Also that you're not funny.
And that I'm not funny.
Which is such a lie. I mean, you anyway, do hate all men, but...
That part was fine. Yeah, that part I took no issue with, young student.
I mean, true.
Yeah. This has been a goddamn delight. Mm-hmm. Vivek, where can people find you online?
At VivekShraya on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And also, I am very passionate about my website.
Your website's amazing.
Thank you.
It's very good.
Thank you. I treat it as like a digital archive of work by a trans feminine queer person of color. And there's not a lot of archives in that way that are like public and accessible. So if you're looking for like free music or writing, or there's just like lots and lots of videos, please, it's all there for you to consume. VivekShraya.com.
Great site. Check her site out. It's beautiful.
Trisha's on there. Your art.
Yeah
Trisha's on there. Beautiful art project. Yeah. You did that amazing thing at the art gallery.
Yeah.
You did that performance. Yeah. Vivek's the best. You should check out all her stuff if you aren't already. Don't be a fool.
You, Mr. T. Don't be a fool.
Yeah. You can find us at Cantlit on Twitter, at Cantlit on Facebook, cantlit.ca. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
5 stars.
5 stars only. We only accept 5 stars. Wherever you listen to podcasts, but also 5 stars only on Apple Podcasts. And Jen, people can find you.
Oh, you know, on Twitter at Jen Suk Fong Lee.
Yeah.
I'm on the Instagram, Jen Leifer, F-U-R.
Yep. I'm a Delbotchery on Twitter and Delbotchery on Instagram. And Vivek, we only have one question for you.
Sure.
What can't you with right now?
I can't with a not fully blended smoothie. Like when there's chunks in that smoothie, I'm like, but it was in the blender. You didn't keep it in the blender there long enough.
I was going to say, just pulse a couple more
times. Like, I don't want chunks in my smoothie. Like, it's called
then.
A smoothie. It's not called a chunky.
I feel like it's not called a chunky. I would really appreciate if someone did a tribute smoothie to you.
I you want to be named after a smoothie.
I want that for you.
Like at like Booster Juice or something.
I
like,
want that for you.
I want that.
What would be in the Vivek?
Oh
yeah! Tell us what are
definitely
your
peanut butter.
Okay,
yeah. I love a peanut butter smoothie, like
it's delicious,
or a nut butter smoothie in general. Banana has like a base. You know, I like that banana peanut butter chocolate combination smoothie. You know,
I mean, it's like a sandwich.
Exactly.
I used to get that when it used to be Capers, not Whole Foods, on Fourth Avenue when I worked at Duthie Books, where we carried your first book.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day.
Vivek, peanut butter,
yeah.
Chocolate, banana.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you know, actually, I won the first thing that I've ever won, second prize, Edmonton Journal, a milkshake recipe.
Well, what?
Award.
What was the prize?
It was a stupid book.
And what was in the milkshake?
Yeah, what was your milkshake?
It was a banana milkshake.
Bananas are delicious.
I fucking love a banana.
People I love who bananas
don't like,
too.
I can't with people who don't like bananas.
I agree.
Like, who are you? Why wouldn't you like a banana? What
I
has
agree.
A banana ever
I
done
agree.
To you?
I agree. Also, did you know that the bananas we have now are not the slippery kind? And that's a different type of banana?
What?
So, like, and you know when they would, like, throw a banana on the ground and someone would slip on it and be all slapstick? That's a different banana than we currently eat all the time.
Whoa.
I just learned this year. It's really...
Whoa.
This is, for my comedy class that I teach, really important news that I have to teach my students. Anyway, Vivek, you're wonderful. Jen, you're wonderful.
Dina, you're wonderful.
Thank you for being here. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.